Sports Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. One of the biggest and best events of the Anchorage winter is a ski race that crosses the whole city, held the same weekend as the Iditarod start. It's a tour of Anchorage, and it's coming up soon with some of the nation's best skiers and with plenty of regular folks who just want to go the distance. On today's show, I have a winner of the race and an organizer and competitor. We're going to share some stories and some strategy, talk about how to race and how to train, and why a big ski race can be a good goal to help work on your fitness and develop an outdoor routine, even if you're a back-of-the-pack skier like me. Well, my guests for this hour are two experts on the tour of Anchorage, Dylan Watts, who's an APU coach, and won the tour in 2011. Thanks for being here, Dylan.
Thanks for having me, Charles.
And Tamara Cornfield is the program director at the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. Thanks for being here, Tamara.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Charles.
So, Tamara, you have been in this job for several years, and yet you've never been there when we had a full tour of Anchorage.
We're
pre-recording, but as we record in late January, we've got tons of snow on the ground, and so everybody is just thinking positive thoughts. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I can feel the positive vibes from Anchorage.
Absolutely. So, it's supposed to be a 25, 40, and 50. And we're going to, we know that our positive thoughts are going to affect the universe at large, we're going to assume that that's going to take place. Tell us about sort of what the race is, you know, how, where it starts from, where it ends up, and sort of what it's all about.
Yeah, so you have two different starts, and then all the races end at Kincaid Park. And the first start is the 40 and the 50K beginning at the Service Stadium. And the second start being at APU in the field. And this race is great because we typically see a lot of recreational skiers up to elite racers. So people who are just here to go the distance, as well as people who, like Dylan, want to put this on their resume as completing and doing really well in this race.
And Dylan, the race really has been a springboard to greater things for some people. I mean, Holly Brooks, that was one of her signals that she was maybe going to be an international racer. The competition is pretty tough.
It is. I think a lot of the community races in Anchorage, even outside of the high school or collegiate racing, there's strong competition. And a lot of times you end up racing with people who are an Olympian from a year or two previous. Many of the guys, folks who are past on the national championship podium or top 10, a lot of former collegiate Division I racers, always in the field in Anchorage, and especially for the tour, that it's a strong local field and hard competition. And occasionally when outside racers come up to have done it, thinking that they're going to enter a local marathon, are a little bit surprised by how stiff and competitive the field is.
Yeah, and it's kind of the crown jewel of our local skiing community. It's kind of the end of the season, and it's the biggest race by far, number of people in it, and it's something that is a lifelong thing. If you've won the tour, you've really accomplished something. And but at the same time, you'll be out there, and there'll be sort of a group of grandmas with a picnic basket, and they'll stop by the side of the trail and break out some sandwiches and a bottle of wine, and that's kind of the part of the cool part about it, don't you think, Tamara?
Yeah, it's a race for everyone, and yeah, it's unique. It's point to point, and it begins in the mountains or near the mountains and goes all the way along the coastal trail to finish at Kincaid, and I think people love that aspect of it.
Yeah. Do you have a feel of what percentage of the people who are racing are sort of trying to get a time, and what percent are just sort of out to have fun or to show that they can ski that far?
I don't have a percentage. Mm-hmm. I bet it's half and half, though, because we do have a very large ski community, not only in Anchorage, but in surrounding places like Girdwood, the Matsu, Kenai Peninsula, and people come up here for this. And you're right, they like that fun aspect. They're stopping at the feed stations, or they're racing it so that every single year they can mark off a little bit of their time.
I know. When the race was going strong, I remember always seeing friends from other towns coming in, and frequently would have people in my garage waxing up their skis, in preparation as they came from somewhere else. And doesn't necessarily mean you're a super hot shot, but at least that you could finish that distance of race, which I think for beginning skiers, it's a significant accomplishment in itself. Yeah?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so we have had a few years with no snow, and you've had to improvise. And I believe in 14, the race was shortened just to go to APU, which was something like 25 kilometers, something that range.
Roughly there,
yeah. A 19K and a 25, yeah.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you could do the longer race, and I could just, you
know, yeah.
Yeah. Just means you wouldn't have to do the Spencer Loop, I guess.
Well, and that year was pretty fun as well, because that covers the whole downhill portion mm-hmm. of the course, which is, you know, after you go to from Service High to the top of the Spencer Loop, the first 10K you climb, but then the rest of that section of the course down to APU is gradually downhill.
Yeah.
And so if you're looking for a pretty fun section of course, you couldn't ask for a better shortened event.
Right. And I want to get into a little later into sort of where the painful part begins, but the race kind of ended before the painful
That's
part.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
So then the following 2 years, Tamara, you had to put on an event with no snow, essentially.
Yes.
Tell us what you did. And there were 2 years when you did that.
Yeah. So 2015 and 2016, we'd basically had a winter where there was no snow on the coastal trail, no snow on the tour trail. And we realized pretty early on we're going to be limited to the snowmaking loop. And the first time we did that, I know Dylan participated.
I did.
It was a 50 minutes, as many laps of the snowmaking loop as you could.
Which is like a kilometer and a half roughly out at Kincaid Park.
Yes.
With like imitation or man-made snow.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had fun. I thought it was a great event. Not a lot of people came, but we did have people come from out of town because it is special to come here and race in Anchorage.
They were already planning to come, and they had cabin fever and said, get me the heck out of home.
Yeah.
And this is just one of the, what you deal with when you do outdoor sports, especially one that's reliant on snow. And our, you know, local races, you know, are maybe a small example of some of the large marathons in Europe where they do snow storage to try and guarantee, you know, the Marcia Longa is a 70 kilometer event in Italy, and they do man-made snow for a lot of years. The whole course will be brown fields and just this ribbon snow.
Like just for one loop?
They'll try to do it. They do it point to point if they can, but sometimes they shorten the course to 45 or 50 kilometers.
That's still amazing.
But it's in a much, you know, event that has 10 times the number of people doing it.
And there's like 2,000 in this, so you're talking like 20,000
right,
people.
Yeah, like 15 to 20,000
wow.
people. So doing ski sports, and you see that globally where they're, you know, organizers are having to punt and figure out,
right.
You know, oh, we can do a loop event, or we have enough man-made snow that make, you know, a 10K course, or we're harvesting blocks of ice out of the lakes and laying them out, having the National Guard or wherever local, mm-hmm. you know, lay it out and then grind it with the machines to make it into snow to try and pull off some of these events. And
amazing.
Some years you get a winter like this where you can do the whole course, it's no problem, and some years they're, you know, people are scrambling to do whatever they can.
Obviously, it's a global warming. We're not the only people facing it. I mean, the thing that you wonder, though, is how are the athletes going to be ready for the race, right? Because there's the National Guard isn't producing their practice trails, I would think.
Yeah. I think, you know, and that's the other thing. Having I grew up in Anchorage, and we mm-hmm. had, even in high school, some winters that would be low snow or no mm-hmm. snow for part of the winter, and then snow later on or snow only up high. And when I went away for college, I went back east, and so maybe one winter out of four has good snow.
Right.
And so you end up, as you should be anyway, as a ski trainer, running a lot, hiking a lot, certainly training on the roller skis in the gym, doing other sports if you're interested in that, just mm-hmm. to stay active. And of course, everybody wants an 8-month ski season, you know, 180 days on snow a year if they can manage it. But that's not necessarily reality. And I think it's just like backpacking or traveling outdoors. There are days you got to make other plans because mm-hmm. of conditions, because of the route, because of the weather.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it is a big subject for skiers here and figuring out what their true love is. And many have switched to fat tire biking. For me, there's no substitute for skiing. Biking is great, but it's right. not as good.
Skiing has a unique feel to it.
The feel, mm-hmm. the grace and the glide and the also the going back and forth between the hard driving and the downhill, which is kind of unique for, mm-hmm, for most sports.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're all sort of praying that we right. keep enough winter that we can keep enjoying it. But getting back to the how you coped with this, Tamara, you kind of tried to turn it into a party out there.
Yeah, yeah. Last year was my favorite of the two. It became kind of a celebratory atmosphere, celebrating getting through the season, winding up with this beautiful sunny day and a beer garden, hot tub and sauna right there on the course. We did actually end up having a 30K. We had a little bit of a longer course on the snowmaking loop and a great organizational committee that could find enough room on there to fit 300 people. We also had a ski cross event that was very exciting for kind of the younger athletes and adults alike.
What is ski cross?
Oh, ski cross is very exciting. We did it as a shorter event. It's kind of like a sprint format, and you have these obstacles and jumps, and if you go around a jump, you're losing time, so it's actually more effective to hit the jumps, go over these obstacles, and it's a good spectator sport.
Okay. It's the way the sport, according to my 10-year-old self, is supposed to be.
Yeah, that's right. When you see those junior Nordic kids out there, trying to figure out the weirdest, craziest
that's
thing
right.
that they can do.
If I can get up this tree on my skis and uh-huh. come off one of the branches, that's perfect.
Which, as a parent, also includes skiing across a gravel parking lot.
Right, you know? Yeah. nothing like hard-won investment destroyed quickly.
That's right, yeah. And you just, but they have so much fun, and it's they'll find any mound, and it's really such a... If you want to be reminded about like your joy of skiing, like go to do an assist, you know, a volunteer coaching
go out
thing
with a kids
with
group
those
and,
kids.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, you can see the excitement.
Yeah. So, how did you do the 30K? Was it just lap after lap after lap?
Yes. Last year it was 13 laps, and then we had a shorter race version as well that just started a little bit after the waves. But
how do you keep count?
Everyone was expected to keep count, and then we had two people counting all the laps, and for everyone, I mean, that is a lot of people to count, but we had our great timers were able to keep track.
I've heard of that, Dylan, where a racer will be doing a multi-lap race and they come in and hold their arms up as victory, and then somebody tells them, wait a minute, you're not done.
It does happen from time to time, and you would, you know, if it's less than five laps, it's kind of like, yeah, you should be able to
You know,
use your fingers, and but there was one national championship a few years ago in Vermont where the 50K was, you know, 17 or 19 laps, wow. something like that, very short loop, man-made snow, and a couple of athletes, I think, lost count, or their coaches lost count, because it's not on the organizers necessarily to keep track, especially if you have a ski race, if there's no lapping rule and the front of the field is passing mm-hmm. the back of the field, it can become quite confusing.
Yeah.
And so sometimes people might ski one short and be disqualified or have to go back, or someone skis a couple extra for bonus.
That happened at the Usyk a few years ago, and some guys took a wrong turn and they ended up doing like an extra 20 kilometers.
Extra K. Actually, I led that show last year.
Oh, really?
No, 2 years ago. It was hard to distinguish which way the trail went, because the actual trail went up kind of a bare spot in a hillside, which is something you have to expect in the Usyk.
Which is a race up in Talkeetna.
And there was a nice snow machine trail around the lake that looked like it had been freshly groomed in. And so we went maybe 600 yards down that before realizing that, oh no, that brought us back around to another part of the course that popped out the other side. And so we backtracked, and it didn't end up changing, you know, the front group's positioning, but it was, you know, what in I think traditional ski racing could, you know, happen. You know, you're
sure.
trying to pick out the trail, and the one with the spruce boughs all over it, you're like, doesn't seem like that nice snow over here. And
It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about the Tour of Anchorage. We're actually recording in late January, and we're playing the show back right before the tour happened. So hello, Anchorage of the future. Good luck with the race. And it's a really fun topic for the three of us who are in the room, who are all total lovers of cross-country skiing. Tamara Kornfield is the program director at the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. Dylan Watts, a longtime competitor, coach at APU, and winner of the Tour in 2011. And my name's Charles Wilforth, and I'm a backer of the Packer, but I'm enthusiastic. So let's talk a little bit about the course and the different distances. Tamara, you touched briefly on the fact that, you know, the 25 is obviously less challenging. It's mostly flat, and then the 40 is a little downhill, mostly flat, and then the 50 has got a big uphill at the beginning. And so as your skiing improves, you can go to the next longer race. I also had a friend who will remain nameless who said, you know, when I was in my 20s, I skied the 50, and, you know, then I got a girlfriend, I dropped down to the 40, and then I got a little older, I dropped down to the 25, then we had kids, and now I ski the 25 under an assumed name, which is...
In many ways, you have to wish the result sheet would show maybe a breakdown of not just age and place, but also
relationship status,
how many kids at home, you know, how much work travel you had that year.
That would help. Mm-hmm. That would help a lot, yeah. But that's one of the fun things about it is that people sort of talk about what their race was like afterwards and share their time. And one thing I learned early on is in terms of skiing etiquette in Anchorage is it's very rude to ask somebody their tour time. So you can tell them their your tour time and they can volunteer it, but you don't ask.
You don't ask initially, yeah. Yeah, it's maybe more better let someone bring it up after swapping stories about incidents out there, or if someone, I broke my pole, or my ski came off, or there were just so many people, mm-hmm. or the snow disappeared somehow.
You got to get the excuses on the table first.
Well, and that's maybe the beauty of the sport is it can always be something else's fault, but you as the skier, and that's one of the bonuses that you can hide behind if you're not really thrilled with your time each year.
The other thing is you can't be too hung up on time because the times are never going to be comparable one year to the next, right, Dylan?
Changes everything.
That's right, yeah. The snow conditions can vary. You can have big skews in time, you know, 5% one year to the next in terms of snow speed or how the race plays out, sometimes even more than that. You can sometimes sections of the course will be very clean snow and other sections very dirty with wind-blown dust from the inlet or the valley, and that can wildly affect ski times and how people are feeling. If you took the whole field, because a lot of people do to the tour year to year, you can put a skew on the field by taking an average of those times and comparing it to years back. And so, this was a plus 3% year, a minus 5% year. But I think getting too hung up on, you know, times can be, you know, one, detrimental to your enjoyment of having done the event, and also the feeling of accomplishment of doing a large point-to-point race that's very unique because it goes through a very urbanized center. You don't have, you know, most point-to-point cross-country ski races are out in the woods and farm fields and in the countryside. And so we have that's very unique, and we have to appreciate our system of multi-use and ski trails throughout the city that allows us to do that. But then secondly, the time can make people think about the wrong things in their training, and even if they're in good fitness or in good, feeling good about their skiing, getting hung up on time and it's a slow year compared to the year before, well, then it can ruin the effect.
You lose your
sense of accomplishment. Yeah. So just kind of push it aside.
I've always just thought about, like, okay, I've never beat that guy. I'd love to beat him. Yeah. Sometimes this other guy, like 50-50, like, you know, hope I could keep up with him. Because if I compare myself to people like you, then I'm always going to be discouraged.
Right. And I think as a coach, what I've always seen is regardless of, you know, if someone's a beginner at it or very experienced or how much they've trained or not trained, we all want to put our best performance forward, even if we're going to wear a silly costume and try to not take it seriously. Everyone has that desire in them somewhere. We probably wouldn't have survived as a species without some sort of competitive spirit, even if we bury it deep down or try to hide it. And I think it's, you know, we don't have to necessarily admit that outwards, but if we, you know, can admit it to ourselves, we all love to pass that person point, or and we all feel a little bit like, oh man, they pass me, like I'm, you know, you feel a little bad, there's a little drop in the esteem with it. And doing athletics, I think that's very normal and natural. And becoming experienced with it and being able to deal with it is critical, I think, not only as our development when we're kids and involved in school sports, but also as adults revisiting that from time to time, because it does make us better people overall. Yeah.
And this is a unique opportunity for adults or people like me in their 50s, because there's not that many. I mean, we're not in the sports thing that we have of competition for kids anymore. We're sort of in that age where people aren't doing that anymore. Right. But this is a race where there are lots of people in the 50s, even through their 60s, who are doing it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Folks in their 70s, mm-hmm. and even a few in their 80s.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
Reno Dupree, right? I don't think anybody's going to be taking his age class.
Right. Yeah. That's right. I think when you can... that's one of the things, too, is you see these stories of folks who are running marathons into their 80s, or a few weeks ago, an Italian gentleman, 105 years old, set a record in the velodrome riding the bike on the track. I think Amazing. He went 22 kilometers or so in his time allotment. And oftentimes people have children and then they spend 20, 25 years for their kids, they don't have a lot of their own time. Yeah. And all of a sudden you hit a period of your life, and skiing, like being on the bicycle, is one of those things that, allows people, you can keep doing it over the long term. The body changes over time. Maybe you're not making the same times as you did 20 or 30 years ago, but that's to be expected. Mm-hmm. And that you can still find that, chance to do athletics.
The enjoyment can still be there. And the fitness and also the camaraderie, which I think is a huge part of doing the tour.
It is.
Probably up at the front and certainly back in the back.
Certainly, I think all the way through. That chance to, up at the front, you know everyone you're racing.
Around. Right.
You might have trained with them all summer, raced them for maybe a decade previously in school events or in national events. And there should be a sense of camaraderie there. Mm-hmm. And I think that exists all the way through. And especially then, too, that, leads also, you're going to be around these people. You don't want to step on their poles. You don't want to step on their skis. You don't want to invite retaliation. They're your friends. And I think that's something to remember as well, and kind of being a good citizens racer is also being a good citizen in a lot of ways.
And with the tour having such a big field, you see a lot of people you might not see all the time, too, because it's sort of the whole community's out there. I'm curious, Tamara, how do you sort the field out so that the people in the front are with the fast skiers and the people in the back are not? Because, I mean, if you put Dylan at the back, he's going to have to pass 2,000 people, right?
But then he's going to feel great about himself if he passed 2,000 people.
The tour does kind of do a self-seeding. People, when you enter the race, you kind of say, oh, I'm... very fast, or I'm, middling, or I'm, pretty novice at this.
How are you doing that these days? Because you've had some technicalities, haven't
so
you?
So in 2014, they changed it. So now there is a seed minutes per kilometer based on past races that are over 25 kilometers. So our timers, Bob Sten, who is incredible with spreadsheets, downloads these past races. So if you've said, I've participated in the Berkey, or I've done the Sven Johansson, the local race, then he can plug that information in, and he'll have a way to get all of the faster people in the correct wave, so that, because of bottlenecks and the frustrations that come with it, being on a narrow course.
Yeah, you do want to, in racing, and since it is a race, you do want to have some control for safety, because the course, if you have ski trails, have always oftentimes traditionally narrow ski trails. Historically, you'd individually start people with 30-second gaps to avoid bottlenecks and blind corners. And
there have been some crashes where some elite skiers ran into some folks who were just not doing their best.
Yeah, especially actually around the APU campus area, where the trail's very narrow and there's some very blind corners that have high speed. In past years, there were different start formats, and sometimes the front of the field would run into the back of the 40-kilometer race or the 25K race at less than opportune moments. Mm-hmm. But that, honestly, the last 5 years has changed a lot, and I think that's a better experience for everyone.
I think they figured out the timing really well so that they're starting the 50K early enough that they'll be gone the main wave of those
in terms of the elite skiers,
racers. And even some of the later waves are out by the time the 40K begins. They start straight from service. They don't do the Spencer. And then they're even getting by before the 25K begins at APU.
I'm not sure we've actually explained the course yet, in, Tamara, in terms of how the 50K is actually a much harder race than the 40K. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so it begins service. You go up Spencer, which is a 7.5 kilometer, very hilly terrain.
Probably the most challenging trail in Anchorage.
I believe so, with really exciting curvy downhills. Mm-hmm. And that itself is 7.5, but then you have the distance to get there and back. And then you're heading out on the Tour Trail, which is kind of a nice flowing curvy trail all the way to Tudor, where you have the overpass,
which
with
is
the bridge.
Mostly downhill, but the 40 will then have started at service high, so they're starting out with that nice flowing downhill.
Exactly.
They don't have to do the uphill killer version.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then they're all going by the 25K start at APU, and then from there, you're right, it's kind of this pretty flat terrain until you get to Kincaid Park, you know, going along Chester Creek, and then curving out onto the coastal trail, and then finding one of a few various ways back into Kincaid Park.
So once you get to Kincaid, you are dog tired. You're thinking, can I make it? Can I make it? You've been seeing these kilometer signs go by, which seem to get farther and farther apart. some joker is putting these signs.
Right.
And then you hit this last hill, and then you want to know who the race director is so you can go and kill him, right?
That's right.
And some years it's, it's not that all that bad, but there'll be sort of dead bodies on either side you have to go through. And other years, it's really, really tough.
Mm-hmm.
So who makes that decision about what that last hill is going to be?
So,
or is that kept a secret for the person's safety?
In the past, it was actually kept a secret until a week out. The last 5 kilometers were revealed, but we will have a race online, so you will know what that course is. And it's the race director and the chief of competition that are coming up with the best option. And it's usually just, at this point, it's what the best conditions we have for the trails, and then the best route that actually exists, because some of those trails have changed a little bit.
Yeah. There's the going up the coastal trail straight up, long, long, hard rise. Going in through the Sisson Trail is relatively easy. And then there was one year, I think, where we actually went up the Leakers Trail to like the highest point in the park.
Oh, really?
Do you remember that, Dylan?
I think that happened long enough ago. I was probably racing the 25K as a junior high schooler. But I think that's the one everyone talks about and refers to historically.
It's pure sadism.
And I think the experience for the race director made it where they just never have gone that way again.
That's like something they do in Fairbanks, right?
That's right. Just make it extra tough, right?
But you expect that.
The course is interesting that way because it starts out with, for the 50K, all your climbing initially, and then a lot of downhill, and then a lot of flat, which is harder than you think of flat, but you you're working the whole time. You never get to have a break and stand on the skis.
Yeah.
And then to finish with climbing up the bluff at Kincaid is pretty taxing for most folks because you don't realize at 45 kilometers, if you're skiing on the flats, you're getting pretty tired, pretty stiff. There's not a lot left, and all of a sudden to be confronted with a hill right at the end there. And it's the same for the 25 and the 40.
I want to get into all that strategy in just a minute. We're going to take a break for the midpoint of the show. We're talking about the Tour of Anchorage, which we're pre-recording, but we're confident it's going to be taking off on deep, deep snow in just a few days here. My guests are Dylan Watts, who is a skier and coach, and Tamara Kornfeld, who's with the Nordic Ski Association. I'm Charles Woolforth. Stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and today we're talking about one of my favorite topics, the tour of Anchorage. One of the nation's big marathon ski races, and a huge event in Anchorage for skiers, happens right around Fur Rondi and Iditarod time, and is a race that goes all the way across the city with 25, 40, and 50 kilometer versions. Elite skiers and folks who just want to prove that they can ski that far. And it's a lot of fun, especially when the weather is good. We're pre-recording today's show, but it's looking positive at the moment. So we're enjoying talking about it with my guests, Tamara Kornfeld, who's a program director at the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage, and Dylan Watts, who is a coach at APU and 2011 tour winner. Dylan, before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about the strategy of this trail, where if you're doing that 50-kilometer version, you're starting out with lots of adrenaline and yes. A big, big hill to climb up. And then you're going downhill for a long time and then flat for a long time, which people would think a flat race is an easy race, but skiers will tell you that actually no, because there's no break. You don't get to stop.
You're just locked in.
And so... a lot of times the people hit the wall or they bonk somewhere around Westchester Lagoon when they realize that they spent too much energy on that first hill, right?
Yeah, very common. I think it's, the old, adage about starting at a pace that you think you can finish at in a long event is important. And that, I think, goes regardless if you're doing the 25, the 40, or the 50. But when you're standing there on the start line with all your buddies and all these people and the gun goes off, a lot of that higher level thought goes out the window pretty quickly.
And a lot of times people will start off as if they're doing 5K, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yep. That's right. You're feeling really good. Your skis feel really good. Yeah. You're really excited. And you get into it and 15 kilometers in, you're like, ooh, like I might have gone out a little bit fast. And by the lagoon, certainly, your Point Warren's off as you're coming around the corner of the coastal trail there, a lot of people start to come apart in the event. And that's usually even regardless of training or experience. I know plenty of guys who are top skiers who've, won the tour or podium in it. And somewhere along the coastal trail between the lagoon and Kincaid, the wheels came off because they grounded away a little too early. Mm-hmm. And there's a few things you can always do to manage that. One, pacing early in the race helps. Relaxing as you're, skiing in a group of people that you might not have a lot of control over how fast or slow you can go, or fast, especially the guy, you can't run over the person in front of you. And then the other part of that is making sure to fuel correctly, both before the race and then early in the race, making sure you're stopping and getting drinks at the aid stations, or I carry my own water bottle so I can feed multiple times as I'm skiing off the Spencer Loop, coming down through Campbell Track. And then the other thing is to...
If you wait till you bonk, then it's way too late.
Yeah, you're not coming back for days mm-hmm. at that point. And then the other part is making sure you're dressing appropriate with layers. People think, oh, I'm going to get hot and sweaty, and that's true. But especially over the years, what I've seen is in the 40-kilometer event where you're starting almost immediately downhill and going to what's often the coldest point in the city around the Campbell Creek Science Center on the tour trail, making sure you have enough layering because the wind chill, especially if you're wearing just a race suit, mm-hmm. Going down that long downhill and into that cold spot can really affect your race later on
because all of a sudden you're suck the calories out
pulls
of you.
The calories yeah. right out of you, pulls your energy, mm-hmm. stiffens up your muscles, and sometimes people have had to pull out of the race at that point.
One year my brother quit right there and he walked over to the hospital and had to take a taxi home because he just got too cold. Wow. And it was in the 20s mm-hmm. At service, but
and these are things you're going to learn with experience. The hardest thing for me to learn with experience is that what you do in that first 5 to 10 kilometers is really going to determine the rest of the race. If you're doing yes. the long,
if you're doing the long version,
because
of the race,
you can completely, and I don't know physiologically what happens, but it seems like you're doing something to your muscles in those few minutes of climbing that hill that is you're going to pay for.
A lot of times you're burning through your energy reserves, your glycogen mm-hmm. reserves, and your muscle
at a fast rate, and once when it's gone, it's very hard to keep. You're starting to rely on, you know, muscles that aren't as well trained or not as strong or buried deep near the skeleton.
So what you're doing, you're wasting your energy.
Or you're spending
getting 30 seconds ahead on a huge hill,
right,
as opposed to over a 3-hour period.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, and I think that's the other thing that's, you know, maybe as a mental approach is one of the more challenging things is being able to think ahead in the moment to an hour and a half from now, 2 hours from now. Where am I going to be? Oh, I'm going to be slugging it out over at the Kincaid Bluff.
Yeah.
You know, I might want to have a little bit left for that. And that's something that comes from doing, you know, many marathons races. You start thinking through that long term, how to be efficient every step of the way, when is it okay to spend a little extra to stay with the group and stay in that draft, or maybe that they can go, I'll catch the next ride. Do I want to lead all these people? Do I want to jump behind them? Lots of the little factors that,
right,
you know, apply to all sorts of different racing. But then having that approach too, where you're like, okay, 3 hours from now, I should drink something.
How bad
I should
do
have
I
an
hurt?
Extra.
Yeah.
That, exactly.
And do the goos and is that important too, to be eating something?
Or I think for some people, for me, I usually go with a sports drink. Yeah, Gatorade, like, or even raspberry jam diluted in hot water. Anything with kind of simple sugars in it that I can drink as I go. Some people like, there's lots of different products out there.
Right.
I only take liquids when I'm racing. You know, so it depends on what your needs are. Lots of people, you'll see them with the goo packets, and I don't like those. I think they make a lot of trash on the trails as people toss them. But I, some people have, you know, little chewables, gummy bear sort of things, basically. And the advice I always suggest for folks is to kind of tuck them up their cuff of their shirt sleeve, and so they stay warm next to the skin, and then you can just roll one out, you know, or roll it in your kind of right there, and then you have something that's not a little frozen block. Instead, it's a nice gummy bear to chew on. So,
well, I want to ask this of both of you because I know you've both raced. When you're doing really well, it usually doesn't feel like it's that hard, right? Your fitness is good, but sometimes you just have to gut it through feeling rotten, especially in a 50K race.
I think in sports, regardless of how accomplished you feel you've become or how much you train, or even if you're, you know, 23, 25 at peak physical conditioning, all it really means is it doesn't hurt any less. You just go faster.
Right.
And so at the front of the race, it's always, you always hit a point, especially in long races, where it's not going well and you feel awful and you just try to grit your teeth and
somehow
get
through that, and you don't psych yourself out. I mean, that's part of the whole game, right?
That's a huge part of it.
Tamara, do you have any insight on that, of how you do that?
This is actually the only race I've ever bonked. I'm typically the person that always reserves something in the tank. That's just how I operate. So I like longer distances. And yeah, I mean, that was the most difficult thing, was finishing that one year that I bonked, but you just keep moving forward. So, because you know you'll get to rest when you get done and eat some pizza.
Yeah. And your muscles are starting to cramp, and
that's right.
And you're not skiing very well at the end because you're so tired.
You start to become very inefficient.
And you start thinking, I'm never going to do this again. What the heck was the matter with
Why
me?
Why did I sign up for this?
And then it takes about 30 minutes to think, oh, I want to do it again next year.
Next year. Right. That's right.
So, just changing the subject a little bit, Tamara, that the years of low snow have got to have been challenging for the Nordic Ski Association. I know you've got a pretty sizable staff with some pretty high-tech expensive equipment that gets the trails in shape, and those people and that equipment are still there when there's no snow. What has that been like in terms of your fundraising and just keeping things together?
Yeah, so there's still a lot that goes into maintaining the trails even in the summer. So even when we don't know we're not going to have a great snow year, we're always making sure that those trails are nice and smooth and wide enough for us to have skiing year round for a very big population of Anchorage. So yeah, it's been pretty tricky, and we've tried to get more creative with how we're fundraising and trying to make sure our events are fun and involve families and the whole community to try to boost registrations. And it's made it very apparent that with this snow year, it's just so much easier when we have that snowfall, when we're not all just around the snowmaking loop.
Money's coming in more easily.
Yeah, so but having to look into the future and realize, you know, we're probably going to be depending on some our resources, which is snowmaking currently, and trying to make sure people realize that and that they're still helping fund the skiing in Anchorage. Mm-hmm.
So from the point of view of residents of Anchorage, if you believe in skiing and you believe in our skiing community, then you need to buy your trail pin whether there's snow on the ground or not. It's not like you're buying it, that you're buying it skiing on that day. You're not buying a ticket. You're buying sort of support for this entire community and this entire sport.
Right. Yeah. And we do groom for multi-use in the winter as well. So we are trying to portray the message that this isn't just for skiers. You know, we are there for people out walking their dogs, out walking with their kids, or biking on the multi-use trails too.
And not just in the wintertime. I mean, this is also summer trail work that benefits all of us who bike and run and, right. and hike on the ski trails.
Mm-hmm. So how do you go about buying your trail pin? How much does it cost?
Yeah, so just go to AnchorageNordicSki.com, and it's a donation, basically. You are becoming a member of the community, but you're putting in a donation for trails. And so there's a lot of different options, and you can check out the options
online. How much you can afford and
yeah,
much
exactly.
makes sense for you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have that link on our site at outdoorexplorer.org. Do the races support the organization as well?
Yes, yeah. The tour is typically a really big fundraiser for the organization, and it's one of our biggest, actually, because we usually have so many participants. It has been difficult the last 2 years with just people not wanting to race in something that wasn't the full tour. So yeah, we are hoping that this year we get our numbers back up.
And how much does that cost? And sort of give us the dates and details for that too.
Yeah, so March 1st will be the last day to register online, and that's the best way to make sure you're getting in there to get seated. There is a price break if you register online before February 19th, and you can also mail in a registration form that's dated before then. And so right now it's $75 for members, $85 for non-members, and then after the 19th it will be, I think it's $85 for members and then $95 for non-members. And then you can register at bib pickup on Friday and Saturday before the race, which is the 3rd and the 4th at REI. And all of those times are on the website, touroofanchorage.com.
So the bib pickup is at REI this year?
Yes.
Okay. And is there any registration at the starting line?
No, there is not registration at the starting line. It's
just too chaotic.
There's too many people doing it that, yeah, we can't do that.
Other logistics, parking and getting back to your car can be quite an issue, depending on where you start and all that stuff. Cover that for us.
Yeah, so there's a couple options. If you're starting the 25 at APU, there's multiple options to park around the Mosley Center. And then you ski to Kincaid, and there are shuttle buses to take you back to where you had your car. And then you could also, if you have the foresight, you can leave a car at Kincaid, although it is much easier just to take the bus back. And then same at service, there is a lot of parking by the little gym, and there are shuttle buses that'll take you back there as well.
Okay.
I've bused many years, and it's always easy.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of fun to ride the bus because everybody's in this great mood of having finished the race. Mm-hmm. Although you can also just carpool and pre-position a car and have a group. It's nice to get somebody to drive you to the beginning of the race.
Right.
Just because of a number of cars there and just all the chaos.
And planning your start, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
And there's always a truck, too, that you can put your gear bag to take to the finish as well, which is, after racing, nice to have an extra shirt and jacket and change of socks waiting for you at the other end. And so the organizers always do a really nice job of making sure you can and have that ready at Kincaid when you get there, and then the bus back. It's no problem if you can't find someone to shuttle you or pick you up.
And we are planning to carry in that, you know, celebratory atmosphere to the finish at Kincaid. So we're hoping people hang out in the chalet, chat about their race, and then enjoy the beer garden and the festivities.
Oh, cool. So are you going to have music and stuff like that? Oh, well, neat. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about the tour of Anchorage with Dylan Watts and Tamara Cornfield. And let's see, guys, if we can convince some new people to do this. It sounds like such a gnarly, challenging thing when you focus on the 50K and the elite skiers. But if you're a reasonably fit person, you could probably do 25 in your own time. And why not? You know, then you're part of this whole scene.
Right.
Well, and it's, I think, something, if you live in Anchorage, you know, why not be part? I mean, if you come out to watch the Iditarod or go to, you know, the hockey games, why not also, you know, take part in, you know, one of our, one of more unique ski races you could do right through the middle of your city. And
this outdoor lifestyle, which is what our whole
exactly
town is about.
That's why about. Most of us are here, really.
Yeah. And it's non-challenging terrain. I think that's why a lot of people like the 25K and the 40K, there aren't big challenging downhills. And so people are comfortable taking their kids. I know kids who've done it 8 and up, and it's totally possible if they're comfortable skiers.
And if you totally decided you had to quit, you could have your significant other pick you up at any number of places.
Right, or walk over to a friend's house get inside. So
There's aid stations very frequently along the way with food and Gatorade and whatever else that's staffed by different high school kids?
Or? Yes, yeah, different high schools host those.
Do they compete a little bit? For I mean, it seems like they're all wearing their jackets and like they want to like be the very best aid station, which I always think is cute.
Yeah, no, they always do a really good job of providing the pep that you need right at that moment.
So in terms of like, so we've covered the person who's like never done a race before, just go out and have fun. What if you are trying to sort of prove something to yourself and really train for this race, Dylan? I think people know that like if you're going to run a marathon, 26 miles, you're going to need to have a schedule and you're going to need to get started right. 6 months ahead, right?
Yeah. I think that's, you know, when you sign yourself up to do an event, especially if you're, you know, looking a year out, well, that's the end goal. It's like making a New Year's resolution. Most of us go back on them because we don't make the plan behind the resolution to get there. And so when you sign up for a race, you're like, ooh. Yeah, racing's kind of hard work, and I would like to be more ready than not for it.
Uh-huh. There's an added motivation there. Like people are going to see you in your times and be recorded.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. There's a little, maybe a little more, emphasis on saying, okay, I need to, you know, more nights than not a week. I need to get out for an hour, 2 hours, riding my bike or running or hiking or skiing as much as I can. And for lots of people, that's sometimes some weeks that might be, you know, 5 nights a week. And some weeks that might be 1 or 2. But
you're talking about like a year of building a base.
Right.
Of fitness.
And I think that's the trick is not saying, oh, in this last month, I'm going to train like crazy for this race.
Yeah.
It better than nothing, in some ways. It's not, maybe it doesn't lead into the more kind of holistic picture, which is like, I should be motivated to be active and taking care of my kind of physical health, which is also taking care of your mental health the whole year round.
Mm-hmm.
And having a race to do can help add structure to that.
It does. And in the it's part of our psychology, right? Like what's more important, probably your heart health and your longevity and how you look and how you feel is way, way more important than what time you put in this race.
That's right.
But the time is what actually motivates you to do it.
The time is what motivates you to take care of all those other things.
Right, right. So if you are a real competitor, what kind of plan would you want to be on? You want to peak well on race day, but that doesn't mean you're training your hardest.
No, usually, for the way I approach it is, you know, I'm, you know, active year round. And then the 2 weeks out from the race are some of my lowest activity period of the whole year. That last kind of period is not a period to do a lot. It's a period to rest, just like you would do with a running marathon or a very long bike race. You wouldn't train those last 2 weeks of the hardest training you've done because you would be exhausted.
Trying to build up your energy reserves.
Right, so you're trying to build your energy reserves. You're eating well. You've reduced how much, you know, daily workout you're doing. But to do well in a 50-kilometer race, you know, and so for the top field, that's just over 2 hours. You're doing, a lot of long training year-round, but you're also doing shorter races, things that take 25 minutes maybe to race, 10-kilometer sort of events to be fit and, working at it every week. In cross-country skiing, you know, the top men, you know, both nationally and globally, are training around 1,000 hours a year, physical training.
So that's like half. That's a half-time job.
Right. Yeah. It would be a half-time job, and now for most of us, we're not doing that. We can't support that lifestyle necessarily.
You do nothing but train, right?
You do nothing but train at that point.
Yeah.
But even to be a you know any sort of you know, you have a 40, 50 hour a week job, you can still, if you can fit in, you know, an hour every day over the course of the year, then you're in a pretty good place. You know, you're getting that activity. An hour alone probably won't do it. You're going to want to go for, you know, long hikes or some sort of long activity in the weekend, because a 2 hour, 3 hour, 4 hour event, in the cold, in the wintertime, you want to have some experience with that.
Right. Plus, it seems to me that you can, if you train an hour a day and that's all you ever do, then you probably do great for the first hour of your race,
yes.
right? But then hour two and three, you may not have the reserves.
You might not have the reserves. You might not have the, I think a lot of times, even sort of having the mind used to being out there, used to being out for, you know, that third hour and the wind's blowing out of the north and it's not the you know most pleasant day, you can be a bit shocking, even if the body might physically, you know, be ready for it. The kind of emotional state as you're becoming fatigued, having some experience with that and knowing, oh yeah, I can get to Kincaid. I'm at Warrensov. Like that's
I've done this before.
You know, there's lots of other people out here with me. There's no you know real danger. The road's right over there. I'm okay. It's not that you're out somewhere north of Talkeetna in the woods and worried about spending the night with the wolves.
Right. So when is your do you do a schedule for marathon skiing where you sort of build a base early on in the season of like really long time and then
because
I've heard different strategies.
Yeah, I think there's I guess I would call it stew training, where you don't focus just on one thing, you know, all the time, where in the summer, if you're, you know, starting 12 months out for the event, you would take an approach where you would do a lot of what you would call kind of low intensity volume training, a lot of, you know, long runs or hikes, a lot of time on the bicycle or in this sport, the roller skis, through the summer months. And then in the fall, start to reduce that training in total hours a bit, and then but add more kind of hard intensity sessions, uphill running, getting on snow, the same kind of entering races throughout the year, especially in the fall and the wintertime, to be to do that sharpening work before you would say, okay, my goal is this, you know, spring marathon event. And you could move that event around too through the year and say, oh, it's in, you know, August. Well, then in the wintertime, that becomes the point where you're going to do all that volume training and then the sharpening work in the early summer.
And it's tough to do those, that intensity work by yourself. If you join a group like your APU Masters group or the Winter Stars or some of the other groups in town, it's probably a lot easier to do sort of the strength training and the intensity training.
I think it's much easier when you have people to meet when it's, you know, not a very nice evening, it's dark and cold or it's raining out and you're like, you know, you get off work, you're like, do I go home? Do I, you know, if you have a group that you're meeting, you, it could be a couple of friends or it could be a program that you sign up with a coach. It's much easier to motivate and know someone's going to meet you there. And you get out there and after an hour or hour and a half, you feel so much better. And I think that's the strength in, you know, either having a self-meeting group or a group that you sign up with.
The social aspect. And also with it, when you're skiing by yourself, you rarely push yourself quite as hard as if you're skiing with a coach or with some friends.
That's right. It's very easy to kind of, nice trees.
I'm doing fine.
Yeah, I'm doing fine. And especially for that, that harder work, that uphill work, if you're chasing someone or being chased by someone, not in a, you know, a negative way, but you can definitely find new places for yourself, new limits.
Tamara, I want to get before we run out of time here, talk a little bit about the history of this race and sort of how long it's been around and how it actually came into being, because it's kind of kind of an extraordinary thing. I don't know many American cities that have a 50-kilometer ski race that have, you know, up to 2,000 people who join.
Right, that goes, cuts through their city,
right,
basically.
Right.
Yeah, so the first race was in 1988, and it looks like there was 175 participants, and then
that's
it started
not too bad.
To, yeah, that's actually, that's better than the last couple of years. And then it started to just build up from there, and I believe it began because they realized, you know, what a great course to connect these two areas, and Kincaid Park was pretty new back then. I think it was a couple years old, and so they realized, like, we could connect Hillside all the way out there.
Yeah, and the Coastal Trail was probably finished right around that time.
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, so how large has it gotten at its largest years?
It looks like in 2007 it was at 2,050 people.
Wow, broke 2,000.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And some years we do have National Masters or other events happening around that time that draw people here. And it is an exciting time to be here in Anchorage because we have Ferrande going on. It is the Iditarod ceremonial start the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so many activities, and it's spring and sunny and beautiful.
When I was writing travel books, I would tell people, you know, you can come to Alaska in the summer and be like everybody else, but consider coming, you know, early to mid-March because there's so much going on. That's when sort of the Alaskans are active.
Right.
And the sunshine is so energizing. Especially if you've been here all winter long in the dark, right?
That's right.
We're and probably more friendly then, actually.
Downhill skiing is fantastic that time of year, too. So mm-hmm. there's tons of stuff mm-hmm. going on in March. It's really kind of the best
time of year. Best yeah. time for winter sports in Anchorage, I would say, would be March and early April.
Mm-hmm.
Late February, too. But that's our snow is mm-hmm. usually the highest. Our sun's the best.
And yeah.
Lots of daylight coming back.
Let's keep it that way. Mm-hmm. So so for this year's race, we're recording in January. It's too early to tell probably how many have signed up. I'm worried a little bit about people getting back into skiing after a few years of having bad skiing and sort of remembering. And I noticed as the season began that there were a lot more pedestrian tracks on the trails out at Kincaid where people had sort of gotten in the habit of walking on the ski trails when there was no snow. And
right.
And everybody has to be reminded of how it's supposed to be, which is ski trails are for skiing in the wintertime, you know. And
right. Yeah, we always encourage people to be mindful of that. Just know that people probably don't know that they shouldn't be there. And just
I don't want to be, in fact, I don't talk to people. I don't want to be rude to them or mm-hmm. mess up their day. But
mm-hmm.
But I also, you know, it's frustrating when the trails have these big holes in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always say, you know, have a friendly conversation and mm-hmm. say, you know, these are our Nordic trails and we try to preserve them because of what it takes to make them and keep them nice.
Mm-hmm. Suggest some alternatives. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully we're in for a good run of winters now and we're going to get back into our routine with the tour of Anchorage and with our whole Anchorage ski culture, which is so fun.
I sure hope so.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being here today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Tamara Cornfield, Program Director with the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage.
Thanks, Charles.
And Dylan Watts, a terrific skier and coach at APU and past winner of the Tour of Anchorage. Thanks for being here, Dylan.
Thanks for having me on, Charles.
And that's it for today's show. Our producer is Eric Bork. Assistant producer is Hannah Duro. She lines up guests for us. And my name is Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.